Welcome to the Lesbian Book Club with Claire Lydon. Please enjoy the podcast from My Lesbian Radio.
Hello and welcome to episode 30 of the Lesbian Book Club with me, your host, Claire Lydon. Now, I have to apologise for the late posting of my last interview with the fantastic Natasha West, but I can just assure you we're back on schedule this month and every month for the rest of the year. Hurrah for that! So this month we have a fabulous interview with author Susie Carr, and she really was a treat to speak to, and you'll hear that interview in a few moments' time. But before we get to that, we're going to see what's hot in the UK and US Amazon lesbian fiction charts, as well as filling you in on the world of lesfic and what I've been up to in the last month. And there's a lot of news, so stay tuned. First up, the Amazon lesbian charts and top of the pops in the US as I record this in the last week of April are some familiar faces. Sitting pretty at number one is Giselle Fox with her book Sun Catcher. Now, this one has Giselle's familiar lady figure on the front cover looking into the sun, and I can only presume trying to catch it at the same time. The story concerns Kate, who's sick of her boyfriend and buggers off to Panama to visit her mate. But when she gets there, she meets Lexi and falls under her spell. So if that floats your boat, get your holiday read on early with Giselle Fox. Number two in the chart in the US is J.A. Armstrong with the eighth book in her By Design series, Roadblocks. This time we're back with everybody's favourite couple, Candace and Jameson, who we've been following now for quite a while. And the story involves a hot pot, I tell you, a hot pot of obstacles, including grandchildren, serial killers, a wedding, and all this while Candace is trying to become the next president of the US. It's a hell of a lot to fit into a novella. So hats off to JA for scoring another slam dunk. People are loving it. Also doing well in the US is MJ Duncan's Symphony in Blue. And this is a story of musician Gwen who meets swim coach Dana. Now they meet at a Hawaiian wedding, so there's clearly a holiday theme to this month's lesfic offerings, and frankly I'm pleased because today in London we've had snow, hail, sun, blue skies, grey skies, thunder, lightning, honestly the works, four seasons in one day. So a holiday theme is a welcome one. Anyway, Gwen and Dana meet at a wedding and the chemistry between the two sizzles. Is this one for you? Well, it's only been out 3 weeks and it's already got 63 reviews. So I'd say if that many people love it, it's worth a go. Also flying high in the charts is Everly James with her book Heartbeat. Now this one is about Jocelyn and Amy who get jiggy one night in Vegas and then go their separate ways, never expecting to meet again. But then, wouldn't you know it, Jocelyn turns up in her new job, and can you guess who her new boss is? I think you can. All I'll say is sparks are going to fly, I tell thee. And also flying up the charts in the US is Robin Alexander with her new book, Patty's Potent Potion. And try saying that after a few tequilas. I'm not going to bother. I know I'd be rubbish at it. This one is a second chance romance where Shauna has always pined after Ashton. And when she goes back to her hometown after years away, could the wish she desperately wanted and stirred into Patty's potent potion all those years ago finally come true? I think the answer might be perhaps maybe, oh, I don't know, read the book. But one thing you can guarantee with the Robin Alexander book is plenty of laughs. So I'm sure that will fit that bill perfectly. In the UK, Jade Winter's latest Lost in You is still also going great guns, and it's still top 20 in the US. I love the strapline to this one, and I can only read it in a movie voiceover style. So you ready? The last thing Heidi Cross needs is to fall in love with the enemy. I'm not sure I did that very well, but you know, you get the impression. Maybe I haven't got a future in movie voiceovers, but you know, it's a heartbreaking fact, but I've got to accept it. Anyway, Heidi is the manager of a young mind centre fighting an eviction notice, which is being led by Gallabout Town and Gold Star lesbian Vanessa. But silly Heidi, she can't fight the moonlight where Vanessa is concerned. But can she find a solution for the centre and for their love? Read the book and find out. And from Jade, we go to Jay and her new book, Falling Hard, which is about medicine, romance, and a game player falling hard for the single mum next door. Now it's Jay, and we all know it will be a cracking read. And that is it for the charts this month. So lots of new books for you all to discover. So rush off to Amazon or anywhere else you buy them. I'm sure most of them will be there, unless they're in Kindle Unlimited, and then they won't. So what else has been happening in the world of lesfic over the past couple of months? Well, you know, quite a lot, actually. First up, Lady Lit Publishing has announced a new service for readers of lesfic called, handily enough, mylesfic.com. The service will team up with authors who want to discount their books for a limited time period. The service will then send these offers out to readers who sign up for free every single week. So the deal is, if you're a reader, head on over to mylesfic.com and then put your email address in the box there, and mylesfic.com will send you cheap lesfic deals, cheap and discounted lesfic deals every week. So that is a win-win. It's free, and you're going to get great reads for discount. Hurrah for that. Well done, Lady Lit, which is the brainchild of Lady Lit, run by Harper Bliss and her missus. Also this month, the Golden Crown Literature Society has announced the nominations for the annual Goldie Awards. And there are a host of household lesfic names included. And for a full list, head on over to the GCLS website and find them there. The awards take place at the GCLS conference, which this year is being held in Chicago from July the 5th to July the 9th. And I think there are probably still tickets available, so head on over to the GCLS website for more on that. But that conference is in the US, so I haven't made it there yet. And it's a bit frustrating this year, actually, because I'm going to be in Chicago in June, but that's in July, and I can't really justify going back all the way back to Chicago a few weeks later, so I can't go this year, never mind. But I will be at this year the inaugural Diva Literary Festival and Awards, which have been announced, and they're taking place in Birmingham in the UK on the weekend of November the 3rd to November the 5th this year. Now, I'm happy to say I'm signed up to appear at the festival, so I'll be doing readings and panel discussions and generally bigging up lesfic to anyone who'll listen. And I'm really excited about going along, but both as a reader and a writer, because the author lineup is immense. It includes Val McDermott, who's a, well, basically she's a legend, isn't she? Stella Duffy, who was probably wrote six books I read, so she's a legend too, as is V.G. Lee, who's also appearing, as well as the likes of Kiki Archer, Claire Ashton, and a whole host of other lesbian romance and lesbian fiction writers from all genres. Mari Hanna's going to be there as well. Loads of people. So if you want to find out more, go to divaliteraryfestival.com and you can see all the authors there. And if you haven't bought tickets, now's the time. Don't delay. You don't want to miss it. I'm going to be there along with loads and loads of people and readers. So it's going to be great. And also, as well as the Literary Festival, there's going to be a Diva Literary Award. So if you want to vote in the awards, you can do that on the website as well. It's got a host of categories, and one of them is for Best Lesbian Fiction Book. And so I vote for Nothing to Lose there, or any of my books in the lesbian fiction category would be just terrific. If you want to vote, go to divaliteraryfestival.com and then click on the Nominate Now button, which is under the Literary Festival thing, menu. So that's all the news. Lots to talk about. Finally, what have I been up to since we last spoke? Well, being a busy, busy bee, I can tell you that much. March was taking up writing the first draft of my new novel, A Girl Called London, which is the long-awaited, very long-awaited, third book in the London romance series. So this is a follow-up to London Calling and This London Love. It's a standalone novel, so you don't have to have read the first two. But if you did, I'm sure you'll enjoy it even more. Yes, long awaited. It's been 2 years since I wrote a book in this series, so it's about time. I really enjoyed writing the first draft. I really knuckled down to it in March, and I cranked out 75,000 words, not just on that book, but I think probably about 60,000 of that was on that book. I'd written a bit of it before, so... And I've spent April editing, and then I sent it off to my editor mid-April. So I just got it back yesterday. We're nearly at the end of April now. So I'll spend the next couple of weeks bashing that into shape, and then it will go out to beta readers. I'm hoping to release it late June. So watch this space, A Girl Called London, out soon. As well as that, I've also been packaging up my All I Want series to release as box sets. So books 1 to 3 is already out as a 3-book box set. I'm going to be putting out books 4 to 6 as the second 3-book box set in May, as well as the complete box set, books 1 to 6. So look out for those. And I've also commissioned a narrator to record an audiobook of Nothing to Lose, and that should be out in the summer. She's going to be recording that over May and June. So lots coming up, and I've got to say I'm really, really thrilled and excited about the audiobook because I love audio. I walk around all day, every day, with my headphones in my ears, listening to podcasts and audiobooks. So I'm really, really excited to hear my book be brought to life in audio. So listen, I'll keep you up to date. I've written a blog about it on my website, if you want to go and have a look at that, clairelydon.co.uk. But I'll keep you up to date with how it's going, but that should be out summer, so I'm guessing July, August. Anyway, that's enough about me and everything else. Coming up now, we've got the interview with the fabulous Susie Carr. Hope you enjoy. So joining me today is US author Susie Carr, who is the author of many books, including Sandcastles, The Dance, and most recently, Beneath Everything. She also hosts a podcast called Curves Welcome as part of the Lesbian Review platform. She's an avid blogger at Curves Welcome too, and describes herself as a philanthropist as well as an author. Susie's a huge favourite in the lesbian fiction world, and it's an absolute pleasure to have her on, so welcome, Susie.
Thank you, Claire. Thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here.
No, it's great to have you, really great. So how are you today, and what have you been up to so far?
Yeah, I am doing great. Here in the US, it's 3:30 in the morning for me, so I am up at 2 o'clock, sometimes 2:30 in the morning, and I have been up and at it, doing promotional work, tidying up my blog posts for the week, and drinking a cup of coffee, getting ready to start the day.
Yeah, 3:30 in the morning. So you're a night bird then?
Well, actually, I'm a morning person. I go to sleep by 6:30 p.m., and I am up at 2:30 a.m.
Wow, that is incredible. But I guess it is the time of day when people get things done, isn't it? Because no other interruptions.
Absolutely. Everybody's asleep right now. I'm sure that Bumblebee will probably wake up and come downstairs, and maybe, you know, you might hear her bumping around and trying to go out the doggy door.
Right, okay.
We'll see.
And for those of you who don't know, Bumblebee is Susie's dog, who she posts a lot about on social media, so it looks very cute. So describe where you are today to listeners.
Sure. Well, this morning I am in my basement. It's a finished basement, and I'm down here so that I'm not waking up the house. but typically this is where I work out, and many years ago I actually used to cut hair in my basement too. This used to be a salon where I used to take clients and cut hair on the side, and then I don't do that anymore because I don't have time for it.
No.
But I am sitting right now in my hairdressing chair, which is something that has been with me for probably 30 years.
Oh, wow. How cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So I can swing around on my chair right now.
Yeah.
Very cozy and comfortable.
Yeah. It's not one of those that give you massage as well, is it?
No, but I do have one of those up in my living room, one of those massage chairs.
Oh, you
which
do?
I use daily because it helps me meditate.
Awesome, awesome. So you are a woman of many chairs, and here I am.
I am, yes.
Here I am sitting on a dining chair. I feel inadequate, frankly, but there you go. And have you ever included your hairdressing sort of past in any of your books?
I have. Two Feet Off the Ground, which was my second book that I wrote. It was based in a hair salon. Two best friends had a hair salon together. So yeah, that was so much fun to write because it just brought me right back to those days when I used to work in a salon setting.
Yeah, I imagine.
It was just a lot of fun to write.
Yeah. So talking of your books, how would you describe your books to someone who's never read one?
Well, people have described them to me as philosophical. And so I would have to agree because they are full of life lessons. I try to put a life lesson, things that I learn along the way, into each and every book that I write, because I feel like for me that gives the words meaning, and I enjoy learning about things and sharing that information through fictional work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, and having read Beneath Everything, I would probably agree with that as well. Yeah, it was very touching and beautifully written.
Thank you.
And talking of that book, what a great segue that I just did there.
You did.
it's Beneath Everything is your latest release. And as I said, it's a lovely romance and a homage to diving and the lessons it can teach us. And I know you did a diving course in preparation for that book. So tell me a bit about writing it and how that was.
Yeah, sure. So I did not set out to write a book about diving. It actually was not even something in my radar.
Okay.
But then one day, a friend of mine had asked me, he's a scuba instructor, and he said, I want to put together a class, and I want to teach a few people how to scuba dive, because I'm looking for scuba divers to go hang out on the weekends and go diving.
Okay.
So, yeah, so my better half and myself, we said, you know what, let's try this. I was looking for something I wanted to shake it up in my life. I wanted to get out of my comfort zone. So I thought, well, this is perfect. This will definitely get me out of my comfort zone. So we went, we tried scuba in a pool, and, you know, at first the experience was I had a panic attack under the water, and it was just really uncomfortable to breathe underwater. It's not something that's natural. And then I would say like a half an hour into the experience, I started to come alive, and I started, meaning like it started to feel comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually really liked it. And so we just pursued it. And we ended up becoming open water scuba divers. We went on this big trip to Bonaire and dove in the middle of the ocean and had a great time. But throughout that whole experience, I was like, this would make a really great setting for a book eventually. So I started to take notes of everything I experienced. And so all of those experiences that I went through, learning how to dive and then becoming a diver, I put into this character Sarah and Jolene. And so Beneath Everything, the setting is on an island. Part of it is on an island. It's about scuba diving. However, the book is not about scuba diving. It's really it's a romance book, and it's about finding your life purpose. And scuba diving is just an avenue that allows the character to grow and understand the importance of slowing down in life and taking it all in and doing what your heart wants to do instead of what your pocketbook wants you to do. You know, it's not all about money. It's about experience.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you can really tell actually in the book that you have experienced what you're writing about, or else you've done amazing research. What are the two? Because the detail and the experience, it's like you're living through it yourself. So, yeah, so that was really well done. And that's quite incredible, isn't it, that you didn't actually set out to write a book about diving, but it just sort of came along. But I guess that's how things happen, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, and, you know, with all of my books, I would say it's different with all of my books. Sometimes I set out to say, I want to write a book about XYZ, and then I'll go into hands-on research and do that. But with this particular book, it was one of those where the experience came first, and I thought, yeah, I'm going to write about this. And so all of the dive scenes in that book are my experiences. They're true to life.
Okay.
Everything that Sarah went through, I went through myself.
Yeah.
So it was really fun.
I felt the panic in some of those scenes.
Yeah.
And have you managed to take the life lessons yourself and slow down and live in the moment and look around?
I have learned to do that. You know, I'm a person who, I am full of energy and I have all of these goals I have this vision board and a goal list, and I used to be the kind of person who would never settle down and just get comfortable and learn to slow down. I was always on the go, and you know, quite frankly, that kind of takes a toll on a person, and you miss out on a lot of the beautiful, simple things in life when you rush through your life trying to get from one goal to another. So, yes, I have learned through my experience as a scuba diver, which started 2.5 years ago now, that's when I really started to learn that slowing down and really prioritizing what's important in your life is critical. And since learning that, I feel like my life has opened up and blossomed into something that has purpose and meaning and that I can thoroughly enjoy. And I'm not running myself ragged trying to do it. So it was a really important life lesson for me to learn. It took me a while to learn it, and I'm still learning it. I still tend to go back into my old mode once in a while, trying to get through 10 million things on my to-do list, and then I stop and I say, no, what are the priorities? And I reevaluate, and I start over again.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's something we're all learning all the time, isn't it?
How to
do things like that. I know I've read a million, productivity or self-help books. Gold time management. I remember that from one of them. But it's a good motto to live by. Just do the things that are important. I'm trying to do that too. And also in this book as well, some of the writing is just beautiful, and I particularly like some of the imagery your words create. And is that something you craft as you go along as well? Are you continually learning your craft as well as life lessons too?
Right. I feel like as a writer, I'm always learning my craft. I'm always redefining it and sharpening it, polishing it up. So that's always, I always want to be in learning mode, so to speak. So yes, I feel like that's something that I am continuing to examine and evolve as I continue to grow as a writer. I love using imagery in words. I feel like that's my style. And the way I get to that point is I go through, before I know that I want to write a really introspective type of scene where my character is putting me in that setting, I typically start out by doing a meditation session before I write, because I need to clear my head completely of my own issues, my day, my life, and get out of my own head so I can float into my character's head and really be there in that moment. And the only way that I've been able to successfully do that is by meditating and just completely relaxing. And that's how I get into I guess you'd call it the creative writing zone.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's really interesting. And do you find meditating, is that something you do as a practice generally?
I do. I started doing that back when I wrote Sandcastles. I learned all about holistic medicine, and one of the things that I started doing was learning how to meditate. So I used guided meditation, which is a narrator talks you through scenarios where they're very relaxing. And so I tend to go towards the healing guided meditations, which help me to balance myself and my chakras and all that kind of good stuff. So yes, I do that daily. It's something that I do first thing when I wake up. I usually listen to just like a 5-minute morning meditation. And then when I go to sleep, I fall asleep with my headphones on, and I listen to a guided meditation to help me just decompress for the day.
Okay. Cool. So you came across meditation when you were doing your book Sandcastles, as you said, which deals with sort of psychics and the power of holistic health treatments. Was that a passion of yours before, or is this, again, something that came along via doing book research?
Well, it was something that I've always been interested in in holistic medicine, but I wanted to explore it even further, and I thought, well, what better way than to actually go in and do some hands-on research? So I was in contact with people who practice this daily from India. I also went to a holistic center and started doing acupuncture and Reiki and really working and consulting with somebody at a wellness center close to my house to really bring it to life. And I just loved it and I embraced it. And, you know, I went through a health scare where I had to have an operation and all of this stuff. And I used this, I used the experience of holistic medicine and guided meditation to help heal me as I was going through that. And as a result, I came out of it perfect. I'm in great health, and I continue to be, and I continue to practice everything I've learned, which has just kept me really centered and balanced and focused on health.
Cool. No, well, that's great to hear. Great to hear that you're in great health. And talking, so you, clearly you do a lot of research for your books, and you did that as well for The Dance, which is a really popular book of yours about beekeeping. So tell me a little bit about that book and your research you did for that.
Oh, sure, The Dance. So I was, one day, I was watching a TED Talk video, and TED Talk is, I don't know if you're familiar with TED Talk. TED Talk is, experts come and they present in a short amount of time, a very important, timely topic. So this particular day, I was tuning in and listening to a bee expert talk about the demise of bees, honeybees, and how that affects us, and ways that the average person can help, I guess, prevent the demise of the bees by doing simple things, and, you know, like letting your dandelions grow and not using pesticides and just things that are very simple and easy to implement. And I thought, oh my gosh, I knew there was a problem with bees, but I didn't realize to the extent that it affected every single being on the planet. And I thought, gosh, I would love to write, I want to research this more, and I want to write something and share this information with people in a way that, through a fictional story. Mm-hmm. So I contacted a local beekeeper, and him and his wife took me into their bee apiary, where they have 50 to 60 beehives, and they let me shadow them. So they mentored me, and I was able to go in there and put the bee outfit on, you know, the beekeeping outfit on, and experience what it's like to be around tens of thousands of honeybees at one point. And so to this day, I still go and help them out. I help them to, you know, clear out the pollen trays and things like that. And it's such a cool experience. So I learned so much from them, and I learned so much about these beautiful, beautiful beings, honeybees. Mm-hmm. And so ever since writing that book, I had shared some of the information in there. And now readers to this day, it's been out for about a year, over a year now, readers are always posting pictures of how they're helping the honeybees and flowers that they're planting and weeds that they're allowing to grow on this, maybe through wildflowers in their yard. And it's wonderful. They're sharing all of this information. And what really helps, what I'm really happy about is my niece. She's 21 now, but she started this whole Facebook group called Operation Beekeeper. And she's just sharing tons and tons of information about bees and ways that we can help keep them. And it's just a beautiful thing. And I feel really, really happy that there's so much awareness about honeybees and that this story helped to tell that tale a little bit better.
Oh, yeah, that's really cool. You should be very proud. You've inspired many people to help the bees. So, and it's like you say, isn't it? Stories do make issues come to life. So it's a great thing to do. I've got a massive lavender plant in our garden, so we get a lot of bees in our garden.
That's fantastic.
But you know, I'm happy with the bees. It's the wasps I don't like.
No.
The wasps come after your food.
They can be intimidating.
Yeah. So you also host a show on the Lesbian Talk Show called Curves Welcome, a podcast like a bit like this one. So talking about issues that people face in their lives. So tell us a bit about the show and how are you finding the experience of podcasting?
Oh, sure. I love podcasting. I sort of just fell into it thanks to the help of Sheena from the Lesbian Talk Show, the Lesbian Review. She approached me one day after I had done a small little 30-second video clip on YouTube where I narrated it to something that I wrote on my blog post about embracing life's curves. And she contacted me and said, you know, this would make a great podcast, the idea of embracing life's curves, sort of like a motivational, inspirational podcast where you share insights of, you know, your experiences and ways that people can live their best life. And I was like, yeah, that sounds awesome. So right away, I got to recording my first podcast. And I started that last year. I believe it was in the fall that I started. Mm-hmm. And I do it every other week now. I record a podcast, and it's hosted on the Lesbian Talk Show. And it really is all about embracing life's curves and, you know, just motivational insights and things I've learned along the way, things that I want to share. And it's there. The podcasts are typically less than 10 minutes long, and they can be all found on the Lesbian Talk Show channel as well as the Lesbian Talk Show Facebook group.
Mm-hmm. And are you getting a lot of feedback from that?
Yes, actually. I get people that do email me at susie@curveswelcome.com. I've had people sign up for my mailing list because of the show, and they're able to receive a free book of mine. And so I'm getting feedback that way. And then also in the chat group on Facebook, it's wonderful because all of the podcasters are in that group talking with listeners. And so it's a wonderful place. Everybody should go and
I agree absolutely. The Lesbian Review site is amazing. Sheena does a great job on that, and she's done a great job getting the Lesbian Talk Show up and running as well, so kudos to her.
Yes.
So let's talk a bit about your writing process then, Susie. Can you describe to me your writing process daily? Do you have a Obviously, as you were saying, you sort of get up really early in the morning to write and do your stuff. I'm interested to know, when you're falling asleep, like you said, 6:30 at night, you go to bed?
I do.
Yeah. So do you just go to sleep straight away? Because I have a lot of issues sleeping. You don't, I'm taking it.
Well, I do the guided meditation prior to falling asleep. And so that just puts my mind at ease. If I did not do that, I think my mind would go running, would run all night long.
Okay.
So this puts me in a really calm, meditative state. I fall asleep.
Yeah.
And here's what happens to me, though. I do wake up in the middle of the night, and in the past, when I've woken up in the middle of the night, again, my mind starts to go off on these, like, tangents. Oh, what if my character did this? What if I wrote a story about this? Oh, I have to include this.
Yeah.
So I would lay awake for the rest of the night thinking about all of this stuff and not be able to fall back asleep. So what I do now is I have a notepad by my bedside, and if a thought does come to my mind, I write it down, because as soon as I write it down, I can safely put it out of my mind and know that I won't forget it. And that has helped me tremendously. It's amazing how just by writing it down, and I'm usually scribbling it just in the dark, and the next day sometimes it's hard to decipher what I wrote, but because I am writing in the dark.
Yeah.
However, just knowing that it's off of my mind,
yeah,
really does help me to fall back asleep.
Okay.
That's kind of how I deal with that.
Okay. So your writing process then, your daily sort of routine, what's that look like?
Yeah, so I do, like I said, my creative hour is in the morning. So I wake up, have a cup of coffee, take my dog on a walk, and then when I get back, I spend about an hour or two in writing mode. So I meditate first to clear my mind, and then I just put myself in my chair and write. Now, there are days when, every writer knows this, you have those moments where you hit a creative block, there's nothing that comes to your mind, you're staring at a blank screen. And in those moments, what I do is I say to myself, you have to get something down. You're sitting here in this chair, you're not going to get up until you write something. So I what I do is I do a free writing exercise where I set a timer for 10 minutes, and I write about anything that comes to my mind. I have to continue writing for at least 10 minutes. And what happens is I'll start off, I'll look at a lamp if I have to and say, okay, write about that lamp for 10 minutes. And so I'll write about it, and I'll write about it, and then 10 minutes later, the timer will go off, and I've already started that, writing about that lamp has started the creative process, and then every time, it seems, when that 10-minute mark goes off, I'm writing about my story now, because just going from, just getting the pressure of trying to write about my story is relieved by writing about something different than my story, and then my mind always tends to just spiral into my story anyway. So I think what happens with this creative, with this free writing process is that it takes the pressure off creating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it always seems to work. And then when that 10-minute marker goes off, I just shut it off and I continue to write. Because in my mind, I say to myself, I can do anything for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And it helps.
Yeah, yeah. I went to a writing workshop last year, and they were doing some free writing, and I found it quite interesting. Just doing it in the class, 10 minutes long, so that was quite interesting. But yeah, like you say, it's just sort of getting your hands into the rhythm, isn't it?
It is, and you know, another thing that I always I recommend that writers do, if when they're doing these creative free writing processes, that if you don't want to write about a lamp per se, use the time wisely by getting into your character's head. So in other words, sometimes what I'll do is, when I'm trying to get to know a character, I will sit down and pretend I'm journaling as that character. So for instance, with my character Jolene in Beneath Everything, in a 10-minute writing process like this, I might say, okay, pretend you're Jolene and write about your day. And so I'll take those 10 minutes and write a journal entry as Jolene. You know, how the day started, what it felt like to go diving, you know, what made me frustrated. And then all of a sudden, I've got this whole scene I wrote, you know, half an hour later, not even intending to write a scene. But that's the creative process. And it's so beautiful. It's brilliant. I love getting into that mindset, and I love when I can.
Yeah, no, that's great. That's great to hear you talk about it like that. And yeah, I totally agree. That's a really good writing tip. And by the way, I love that your character's called Jolene. I love it.
Well, you know, I always struggle with finding character names that I don't know. The reason why I struggle with character names is because I always feel like I always come up with a name, and then 5 days later, I'm like, oh, I know somebody already by that name.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to come up with unique names where I don't know anybody named that, and it's impossible to do because there are so many people in this world.
Yeah.
And all the interactions as writers, you know, we interact with people all over the world online, and so I always feel like I know somebody by a name.
Yeah.
And so I was really excited with Jolene because I love that name. There's a song called Jolene,
mm-hmm.
and Miley Cyrus does a version of it, and I was just listening to Miley Cyrus sing Jolene one day, and I thought, that's what I'm going to name. Yes, Jolene. Perfect.
Wow, I haven't heard Miley's version, but, you know, Dolly's version's the best, surely. But
I learned that. I didn't know this, but Dolly Parton is Miley Cyrus's godmother.
Is she really?
I did.
Well, there you go. I guess she has permission to do it then, right?
I guess so.
Yeah. I think we've all learned something today. Thank you for that. No, that's good. I'm amazed. Clearly, Dolly and Billy Ray were mates, right?
Yeah. I don't know.
Well, maybe she's mates with her mother. Who knows? Anyway, back to your writing process. So you've been writing for a few years now. How many books have you written thus far?
I've written 11 novels, and I've written, gosh, how many self-help? I've written a productivity book, writer's insights book, and memorable characters book. So I've written 3 nonfiction books as well.
Okay. So how has your writing and the process changed over the time you have been writing?
Well, I think it's always evolving. So when I first started out writing my first novel, The Fiche Room, it took me years to write that because I had no clue. I didn't know what I was really doing. I was just I must have written 30 or 40 drafts of that book before it even became a book. So
yeah,
I would say that over the years I've learned, I have a process now that seems to really work effectively and keeps writing a book in a timely manner for me. And, you know, for me, when I first started writing a book, I was all over the place. And now I feel like I have a much more, I guess, logistical way of doing it. So, for instance, I always start off with, what's the theme going to be? What is the life lesson going to be? Mm-hmm. And then I center, then I decide, okay, who are my characters going to be? I get to know my characters by journaling through them. And then once I get a solid voice in my head of who the characters are, then I start to figure out, well, what are the challenges facing them? You know, what is it that, what's the biggest thing that they're going to learn? What's their biggest takeaway going to be? And then from there, then I start to decide, okay, the plot has formed at this point, and I string along ideas for scenes, almost like a pearl necklace, if you will, from point A to point B, so that I know, okay, the story makes sense. It has a strong beginning, a strong middle, and a strong ending. And then that's when I start to tie in the scenes and write scene to scene.
Right.
And yeah, and then that's, you know, that first draft that's done at that point is always just the beginning. I always have at least 10 drafts of that beginning, of that first draft, before I get anything, you know, before I get the story into a shape where I'm ready to share it with beta readers.
Okay.
And finally editors.
10 drafts, wow, that's a lot of drafts. Yeah,
yeah. It's always, that first draft is always horrendous.
Yeah.
I don't worry about grammar, I don't censor my thoughts,
Yeah.
I know that I run all over the place with character heads and this and that, so at that point, that's when I just want to get the meat of the story down, and I think that's really important to do instead of getting bogged down with grammar or, well, is the timing good? And I try not to worry about any of that in that first draft.
Yeah, no, yeah, totally agree with that. And your books have been described as emotional juggernauts, which I like, and is exactly what romances should be. So, do you have any tips on writing emotions and really getting under the skin of your characters?
Well, for me, you know, the way I do that, like I said, is I try to get into their heads by journaling as them, and I try to figure out, mm-hmm. you know, as human beings, we're feeling human beings. So I try to put myself in their heads and think, well, how is this going to make her feel? And what logical things are going to come from that, from her actions? And I always love to create people who are flawed, because we're all flawed in one way or another. And I feel like that makes us real, and it makes the characters real, and it makes them relatable. Nobody wants to read about a perfect character, because I don't think that we can relate to perfect characters. And so it's really important for me to put them in really tough situations and say, okay, get out of it now. How are you going to get out of this? And I think that's how a writer can bring her characters to three-dimensional life.
Mm-hmm. No, that's great. Yeah, no, that's really good advice. And obviously you write lesbian fiction. Are you an avid reader of lesbian fiction in general?
Yes, I love all kinds of... I'm an avid reader of all kinds of fiction. Particularly in lesbian fiction, my gosh, I've got a few favorites. First of all, I love your stories. Especially your series, the All I Want series.
Oh, all right.
I fell in love with All I Want for Christmas because we had read that in a book club that I used to moderate online before. And we had featured that book.
Yep.
And I love the way you tell a story. And it was just so entertaining, so lively and light, and it was wonderful.
Oh, thank you very much.
Who knows you on that? That was a brilliant series.
Thank you.
I'm
blushing. I'm blushing.
Loved, loved, loved it. I'm also a fan of Victoria Avalon. I'm reading her book right now, A Small Country About to Vanish, and she's brilliant too. She has such a way with words. She really brings a setting to life through the way she describes she just, I don't know, she does something to my senses.
Yeah.
I'm right there in that story, and it's just beautiful, beautiful words. Rachel Gold is another one. I loved her story, Being Emily. That was profound and just really enlightening. Beautiful story.
Okay.
Karen Callmaker, she's one of my favorites. And one of the reasons why is because the first lesbian novel that I wrote was Maybe Next Time. That was her novel. And I fell in love with that story and her character, Sabrina. And so she'll always hold a special place in my heart because, you know, it was my first lesbian fiction novel to read.
Yeah. She popped your lesbian fiction cherry, so to speak.
She did, absolutely.
Well done, Karen.
I'm also a fan of, you know, I love Eckhart Tolle and Paulo Coelho and Catherine Ryan Hyde, excuse me. I love reading just a different range of fiction. And I especially love reading fiction that helps me to think differently as a person and changes me. And those authors that I just mentioned also do that. So, yeah, they do that for me.
Yeah, no, that's great when that happens. And I agree with you on Catherine Ryan Hyde. I've only read one of her books, but it was The Language of Hoofbeats, and it really had an effect on me. That was in my top five books of last year. It's really good.
Oh, yeah. She's brilliant. She's incredible.
Yeah. So what's the best piece of writing advice you've ever been given, Susie?
I would say the best piece is to read your novel out loud before you publish it. I started doing this probably around my fifth or sixth novel that I wrote, and I'm so glad that I learned that. I learned that through an editor. She said, you know, I want you to take this now. It's polished. Now I want you to read this out loud. And when I do that, what happens is I hear things that my eyes missed. So I also, one thing that it really helps me to discover is when I repeat words, and I think that happens a lot as writers. We repeat things, and you don't really see it. You don't notice that when you're just reading it with your eyes, but when you start talking it through, you're like, wow, I just said that word, you know, two sentences ago. So it really helps to bring that to life, and it also helps you to see mistakes, hear mistakes, I should say. So I really feel like that has been evolutionary in my writing. And I feel more confident when I release a book now that I've caught everything that I can catch. I mean, you know, you do the best you can, and I really feel like that is the last filter, and it is a very helpful one. I would recommend that every writer do that. It takes a lot of time to do that because it really slows you down. You've got to read each and every word, but it's important.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I do that too, and it does take time, and it gives you a sore throat.
Yes, it does.
And it gives you a whole new appreciation for audiobook narrators.
Yes.
But yeah, it's well worthwhile doing. Rachel Spangler had a blog on that and told me to do that, so kudos to her.
Yeah, kudos to her, yes.
So what's next for you? Beneath Everything came out, was it in March? February, March?
Yes, March 1st it came out.
So what's next?
All right, well, I have two things in the cooker, so to speak. The first one is actually not a novel. It's a nonfiction piece. It's literary. It's a book of essays, and it's going to be called In the Company of Sunshine. And it's a tribute to my dog, Sunshine. I lost him 2 years ago. He passed away, and he was very important to me. He taught me a lot of life lessons, and a lot of the stuff that I write in my blogs, and now in my podcasts even, it's really a reflection of some of those life lessons that he taught me. And so what I did was I put together 28 essays, and they're based on just, again, motivation and things like, you know, living your life purpose and how to deal with change and how to forgive somebody. And it's all a reflection on that. And so that is being sent to my editor next week. And I have a fantastic, talented, photographer, Amanda Robinson, from Australia, who actually photographed the cover of the dance.
Okay.
She is providing, we're working together on this, we're partnering on this project. She is providing all of the photography that will be the backdrop to this essay book. Beautiful photography from Australia, beautiful beings, you know, birds and owls and just nature, gorgeous photos.
Mm-hmm.
So she's been working hard at gathering those photos for that. And so this is not going to be a Kindle book because of the photography. This is going to be meant to be like a coffee book table.
I knew where you were.
Can you edit this out? This is going to be a, you know, really a coffee book. Oh my God, I can't.
It's a coffee table book.
For editing, yes. Oh my goodness. It's 4 o'clock in the morning. I've only had one cup of coffee. This is going to be a book that people will, it's going to be hardcover.
Yeah.
And it's going to be something that you can put on your coffee table.
Yep.
So people can browse through it. And so I'm really proud of this, and I can't wait for this to happen. We are in the process of trying to find a publisher. It's very difficult. There are not a lot of publishers publishing this kind of book, and the ones that do typically require an agent, which I don't have. So I may be considering publishing it myself under my publishing company, Sunny Bee Books.
Yeah.
But not really sure yet. We're still just in the early process of putting together the photographs and getting everything edited at this point. So we'll more on that to come. But the second thing I am working on is a novel called The Curvy Side of Life.
Okay.
And this is my next novel, and I'm just in the beginning stages, just brainstorming it at this point. I have already done my hands-on research for it, though, and it is going to be, the setting is going to be a dance studio, and the reason why is because I started taking Latin dance lessons, I would say about 2 years ago. And so I have just enjoyed that. I take it every week. I go and hang out and learn how to do Latin dance. And I just thought, wow, this would be a great setting for a book.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is going to be the setting. And it's a story that's going to be examining questions like, you know, does everything happen for a reason? What is faith? And how can I restore it once I've lost it? And so this book is going to be about the trials of this character and how she responds to it. And I'm really going to be using this book as a symbolic, the dance studio will be a symbolic setting that will talk about life and how things in life sometimes break down and how we can rebuild and really, you know, having faith that everything is going to work out as it is meant to work out. And so that's really where it's at so far, very preliminary stage at this point, and I'm really enjoying that process of just kind of refining my idea. Mm-hmm. And next is going to be figuring out who these characters are going to be in this story.
Okay, cool. So will that be out this year, do you think? Or?
That will likely be out in February of next year.
February next year. Okay. So just so listeners know when to look out for it. And I love the title of the other book, In the Company of Sunshine. That's a great title.
Yeah, it just came to me, and I always feel like now once Sunshine passed away 2 years ago, and I always feel like I am in the company of him still.
Right.
He's always there and teaching me lessons, and so it's just perfect.
Oh, that's lovely. Really nice. And final question, if you could be the love child of any two writers, alive or dead, who would you choose and why?
Well, I love the whole philosophical side of writing. I also love the deep meanings in it. So I love Catherine Ryan Hyde for that quality that she has in really digging deep into characterizations and mm-hmm. bringing those people to life. So I would love probably that person and Eckhart Tolle, because the philosophical side of him.
Yeah, no,
I
can see that would be a great combo. Yeah, really good. And where can people find out more about you?
I would say my website would be the best place, curveswelcome.com. I have my blog posts there. I have my podcasts are there. Links to the Lesbian Talk Show podcast channel are there. And I also have a mailing list people can sign up for and get free books and things of that sort. So,
okay. Yeah. Great. Well, this has been terrific, Susie. Thank you so much for taking the time to be a guest on the podcast, and good luck with the books in the future.
Thank you so much, Claire. It's been a pleasure, and I'm so happy that you asked me on here today. It was fun chatting with you.
It really was. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
That's the end of this Lesbian Book Club, so this is me, Claire Lydon, signing off. If you fancy dipping into any of my books, the All I Want series, the London Romance series, Nothing to Lose or The Long Weekend, you can find out more at www.clairelydon.co.uk or just look me up on Amazon, Kobo, iTunes, Barnes & Noble or any of the other digital outlets, including Bella Books. I'm also on Twitter if you want to contact me, at Claire Lydon. I'm on Facebook, claire.lydon, and I'm on Instagram, at clairefic. So come down, comment, tweet me. I'm very friendly and I will reply. Thanks to Denise at My Lesbian Radio for hosting and producing this podcast. It's much appreciated. And make sure you tune into the Lesbian Lounge with Denise for all the latest LGBT news, views, interviews and gossip, as well as the fabulous Ragtime podcast. Join me next time for more hot book club action, where I'll be talking to Harper Bliss and her Mrs. Caroline about all her books and the new service they're setting up, mylesfic.com. And remember, if you would like to vote in the Diva Literary Awards, head on over to divaliteraryfestival.com, and in lesbian fiction, a vote for Nothing to Lose or any of my books would be much appreciated. I'll see you next time on the Lesbian Book Club. Take care.